Welcome, everyone, to Paranormal Roundtable. I'm your host, Josh Turner. And with me is my co-host, Anthony.
Banjo.
What?
Banjo's here.
Banjo can't talk.
That's why I have to speak for him.
Oh, my God.
Because I know you weren't going to include him. He's been talking to me about it, and he feels very left out.
Well, this isn't the live stream. They can't see Banjo.
Well, they can feel him in spirit.
His presence is felt through recording. Spirit?
You're kind of just wasting the listener's time right now.
You see what I'm talking about, folks? Look at what I'm dealing with. Look at what I'm dealing with, folks. If you only knew.
We've been meaning to talk about this. What are his wages?
The power that these people have to just waste time is mind-numbing. Okay, folks. So anyways, yes, that being said, Tony is here. What is it called? The Shumu? Mushu? Whatever.
Yeah, the Shumu.
The Shumu. Shumu's here.
Shushu.
Yeah. So, how was your New Year? Because I know you celebrated some weird time now. What is that?
Chinese New Year, February, a month ago.
It was a month ago. Well, cause see, I don't know. Because the other day you said you were just getting a birthday present from your mom, so that would have been even further back in time.
Well, I haven't been to her house in a while.
So I didn't know. I didn't know what you were doing. So I was like, whatever, man.
And she just got back from Vietnam, so that was spent a little time over there.
Yeah, that's cool. If you're from there, I guess. But so, folks, here we are today, and so we're going to do a show for you. We have a few things to talk about real quick. We're going to get it out of the way, and we're not going to go any further. We're not going to waste your time. One of them is the group's Paranormal Roundtable. Go join Paranormal Roundtable group. It's free, and it's on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with me, you can look me up on Facebook. I have two Facebook accounts that are my personal ones. One of them I don't really use much, and it's just a picture of me in front of, like, banana wallpaper. That one, people are asking me, oh, I've sent you a message on there now. And then the other one is of a crusader. That's one I usually use as my personal account. And then there's another one that I got to tell you about so that you will know, because I'm going to start doing some videos and dropping some things on there on the other account. And that one will be used a lot more frequently. It's Josh Wolf Turner from Paranormal Roundtable. I got about 2,000 followers on there, but it'll grow once people start to figure out that I'm going to be dropping videos on there. Just little things here and there. Some of it we're going to be doing. Yeah, because I need to be able to have an account that I can have however many followers, whatever. I try to keep my personal Facebook account tight. I don't really accept friend requests from just too many random people. And after this whole mess that went on, you know, I just kind of be careful about that. And I'm starting to get back into accepting people's requests. So, yeah, go check it out. It's a fan page. It's Josh with like, I guess, apostrophes, Wolf Turner.
I don't know exactly what they call it. Josh Wolf Turner fan page, something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's this one. But it's a fan page on Facebook.
Okay.
So anyway, that's what's going on. So go in and hit it up, check it out. And I am Josh Turner 940 on Instagram. Hit me up there. And I don't really use X or Twitter, whatever it's called. I just quit using that years ago. Now I know people do. I know people do. But I'm just not into it. I have enough going on as it is. Also, we have a Patreon. If you're interested in helping out, being part of the show or helping out the show, we at this time are trying to get into doing some nighttime investigations where we go out and on location. We did it a few times and it was fun, but I don't have a good phone or good cameras, but I'm going to remedy that. Okay. That's going to happen. So if you want to help out, you can go to printful.com. Is it Printful?
Well, you can find our merch store. If you're watching on YouTube and you expand the description, there should be a link down there. I think it's going to say shop or merch. I think it'll say shop. You just click on that link and it'll take you to the merchandise store.
Yeah. And so you can go, and we're going to be getting some new merch in for the spring. It's coming up and we got some new ideas. We got some camouflage shirts and different things like that. So go check it out. There's going to be some new stuff. The zip-up hoodies did really well. People really enjoyed those and liked those. It's a good way to support the show, and I love when people do that because they can go out and wear the merchandise and promote the show while they support it by purchasing it. But if you want to do a super chat, like during this live stream, which it's kind of like a tip, you can do that too to help support this show. You can do that on the live stream. Now, if you're listening to us on the podcast and you're not listening to us on the live stream, you're missing out because Friday, we have a guest. Saturday, I do the UAP Alien Abduction Alien Agenda panel, which we have several people on there. This coming week, it's going to be Jason Bland is going to be our guest, along with Rob Yox, Christopher Jordan, and Chris James. And we're going to do that on Saturday. Thursday, I'm on with Blondes and Booze. Don't forget. And then, of course, Wednesday, which is tomorrow, there will be another show. And that is with a guest we have on every Wednesday. And so Wednesday and Friday are guests. One of them is an hour long with the podcast / YouTube. But the Friday is just YouTube. Saturday, the UAP, it's YouTube. And then Sunday, which a lot of people say is their favorite day, I retell people's encounters for 3 hours. And that is every Sunday on live stream on YouTube. Now, while we're on YouTube, we're moving things over to Rumble too. So that's happening. But here it is right here. We do it all. And now we're going to be doing investigations, going on location to the many, many places that we have been given sightings. People have told us encounters and we retold them or they've come on and told them themselves. So we're going to go visit these places. We're going to go check them out and we're going to video it. I just need to get the equipment. And one of the things we're trying to do is a night vision camera?
Yeah.
Okay. So once we get that done, we're going to be doing that a lot more frequently. We've tried it a few times and we've had to use our phones. And, you know, yeah, we have cameras, but they're for the studio. And so, yeah, we're doing some new things. And now go and check out our music on Paranormal Soundtable. That's another thing that you can go and do. Paranormal Soundtable. We got new music coming out weekly. Go like and subscribe to that. The Patreon, everybody knows by now what it is, a $10 to $50 tier. Each tier gives you a better swag bag. It's basically what it is. So $50 tier, you get both my books, and then you get like two books from other authors, and then you get a shirt and a bunch of stuff. And then, you know, that's just, we're going to move on. All right, here we are. We're going to talk about what our subject is today. This is a story that was given to me by a woman when she first started messaging me it's a few years back now. She went by the name of Agnes, and I could tell by the way that she typed her information, she was not, English was not her first language. And so eventually she was kind of cryptic at first, and it turns out later on, I know why, because she was sort of afraid. But she'd been listening to the show, and the more that she listened and the more that I talked, she realized and believed that I was somebody that she could trust. And she's correct. When she first told me this story, she asked me not to repeat it. And I was sort of aggravated. I mean, I felt like she had wasted 2 hours of my time, and I was not rude about it, but I did tell her, I said, look, if I would have known that I was going to sit through 2 hours and not be able to say a word about what you just said, I would have told you I don't have time for this. She apologized, and she was very nice about it. And she says, maybe down the road, you know, I'll give you the green light. But for now, I appreciate you being a sympathetic ear and understanding and actually helping me to understand what went on. I didn't feel like I really had done all that much other than listen and give her a little bit of advice on what I knew at the time. How things were. What she experienced is something that cannot be, you cannot explain it in the terms of like the everyday normal world. There is no way that any of this could be misconstrued as normal. It's nothing short of paranormal supernatural occurrences. What happened in 1979? She went to visit Israel. Now, Agnes, not her real name, is she's Danish. Well, her dad was Danish, her mother was Dutch, but she grew up in the Netherlands. And what I learned about her was that when she was young, she was very rebellious. Just from talking to her, I could tell. That's what the situation was. She said she tried to be a good daughter to her mother and listen to her mother. Her father had died when she was young. And without a father figure, she admitted to me that she was wild. But I would say that she almost went out of her way. And I am the one that said this to her. And maybe after, even after all these years, she's quite a bit older than me. She's like, you know what? You're right. And maybe I never did come to terms with that. And what she did, what she was coming to terms with, was the fact that she was openly rebelling against her mother by putting herself in danger. And I believe that it was a way for her to punish her mother. She was the only child from her dad and her mom. When her mom remarried, she had three more children. She ended up with two more sisters and a brother. They didn't get along. She did not get along with the other children, and she became very rebellious, and she began to try to find herself and be explorative in all these different avenues, which took her to various places like Nepal. She ended up in Tibet. She went to Kathmandu. She went to all these different places to find herself, you know, and there were some very scary moments in her life where she almost was unalived, as we say on YouTube, by bandits, by con artists, by charlatans, by opium dealers. You know, there was a lot of like really scary, hairy moments that could have ended her life, but nothing prepared her for what happened when she decided to travel to the Holy Land. She had found Christianity and immediately decided that it was her job to go and visit and retrace the steps of Jesus. Well, she ends up, at least what she told her mother, which turns out, and I don't even think she was being honest with herself, wasn't really the case. And like I said before, I believe that this woman wanted to hurt her mother. Her mother was like, you finally get yourself together, and now you're going to the Holy Land. And of course, at that time, there was terrorism. There was all kinds of things going on. She told her mother, she's like, she had every intention of going, crossing the border from into Jordan and traveling around the desert. And she even kicked around the idea of going into Lebanon, which at that time was dangerous. And she told her, she's like, I don't think that you should be going there at all. And she did it anyway. Her siblings kind of hung around the nest. They didn't really go out far. They didn't do much. One of them lived in Germany for a while, but that was it. They didn't really travel and go out and explore the world like she did. So she was the rebel, and she would come back and regale them with tales of her adventures or whatever. And she was very proud of her travels. This one, that was like nothing she had ever done before. When she went to the desert, that's when she learned about the horrors of the desert that surround Petra, especially in that time. She had gone to Israel, and she was told by the Israelis and the authority there, do not go into Jordan. It's not safe right now. And she ignored the advice. She hired some guides that were Bedouins, and they took her across the border. She was at a place called Masada. I don't know if a lot of people know what that is. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, that's where the Jews made their last stands against the Romans.
Yes, yeah. At Masada.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the general Titus defeated them. When you read Josephus, he's the one it was called the Jewish War. Josephus, the
historian.
The historian, the freeman historian of the Romans. But when you read about it, it's a very interesting story. And she was like very amazed by it. She went there. It's like a national park there in Israel. And she...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
She enjoyed it, and she said, it galvanized me to go further and explore more. So she went into Jordan to do something that was strongly not recommended. You know, she decided that she was going to go with four guides, Bedouin guides, and they were going to take her into the desert and go into Petra. and what she wanted to do. And it was a little different back then than it is now. They didn't have like these guided tours like they do now. It's not the same. And it was shut down for a while because, of course, of terrorism and all these other things. She wanted to sneak in at night and stay there overnight in the ruins of Petra, which is strongly advised against. The authorities in Jordan will tell you that they themselves don't do it. And people will ask why. Well, not necessarily superstition, but they do believe that it is haunted, and it is haunted in a very malevolent way. And the desert around there, they say that if you ever get broken down around Petra, to stay in your vehicle, don't go out. Because many people have had incidents where their vehicles, their batteries would go dead. And when they get out of their vehicle and they go walking around the desert, well, they disappear. There's a thing they call the Nagula. It's like a female spirit. And what it does is it attaches itself to you and devours your life force. You're slowly going insane. And you yourself know that this thing is attacking you, and you can see it and it's happening. But the people around you just think you're going crazy. This thing has an enemy. And oddly enough, believe it or not, it is basically a dog man. I kid you not. There is literally a creature that will go out and attack and kill and eat the Nagula. And it is a wolf that walks around on two legs. I'm not joking. These are some of the legends that are told by not only the citizens, but the Bedouins, the Berber, everybody that lives in that region. They'll tell you this is real, whether they're from, you know, Jordan, Lebanon, you know, Israel, the Levant, full of these, you know, legends and stories. She didn't believe any of it. She told me that one time when she was using hash in Tibet, Nepal, that she saw a shadow demon, a thing that was sitting cross-legged from her, that appeared to be a person dressed like you would see like a modern-day genie, literally stand up and dissolve and turn into smoke and go up through the top of the tent that she was in. And she said even that didn't convince her that it was real. She thought, oh, it's a hallucination, even though three other people witnessed it. She said she was the kind of person that wasn't going to believe in anything because she was a strong-willed, strong-minded, independent woman. And nobody was going to convince her otherwise.
That always ends well.
Yeah. So she in 1979, being 25 years old, very young, very, very young. Probably that's younger than you, right, Tony?
1 year.
Yeah. Yeah. Very young person. So she decided that she was ready to take on the world, and nobody was going to tell her otherwise. So her now being in her 70s, you know, I told her, I said, you know, what did you learn from your time in Nepal, where you almost were kidnapped, you ended up in Tibet, you went all these different places. She took a trip to India, and she was nearly killed there, you know, on the road from Pakistan to India. They almost killed her at the border. And I said, you went through all these crazy things. I was like, and then you decided to go to Petra. And she's like, yeah, because nothing really supernatural had really happened to me that I could say. She goes, but then I realized after what happened to me at Petra, there were several supernatural warnings that happened to me. And what I saw in that tent at Kathmandu, she's like, it was not a figment of my imagination. She's like, it was not a hallucination. And I didn't know this until after I dealt with the horror that was the desert around Petra. And she said, Petra was something that I had always wanted to do. I wanted to explore it. She said, I wanted to go to Baalbek. I wanted to do all these things in the Middle East, things that I've read about and I know about. And she said, when I heard you talking on your show, she's like, I thought you were the person to give this information to. The more I listened, the more I wanted to tell you. And I will admit, at first, I ignored her because I didn't take her seriously. She sent me a message saying, I was nearly killed by a werewolf near Petra. When I read the story, it was really not going anywhere. It was just kind of in, going in circles. That's because she herself was still partly in denial about what happened. And I'll get to that. The first night she was out in the desert, she was with four Bedouin guides, right? She wakes up, they're all gone. And they left her there all alone in the middle of the desert with nothing.
You mean we can't trust total strangers in the middle of nowhere? Who'd have thunk it?
She ended up, not only that, but she had been knocked unconscious and didn't even remember getting knocked unconscious. She woke up and knew that she had a blow to the head. Some of the events that took place directly after that, she attributed to being struck in the head. And maybe that's what it was. Slowly, her memory began to come back, and she remembers these men. Luckily for her, they did not take advantage of her because she thinks that that was the plan. They were going to do something to her beyond beating her. But she remembers, as they were doing what they were doing to her, which was ransacking and taking her stuff, she saw two lights coming across the desert, which she recognized as a jeep. She said, oh, there's headlights. These Bedouins, these desert Bedouins that tricked her into saying, oh yeah, we'll take you there. We'll take, they had no intention of taking her there. They were just going to get her across the border, rob her, beat her, rape her, and get rid, you know, that's it. Done deal. She's like, thank God I'm saved. And then she went unconscious. And she remembered that. As it turns out, she was not saved. And it was not a jeep. Because the next day, as she began to walk toward what she believed was the direction of Petra, which turned out to be going back toward the border, she was met by a patrol, military, Jordanian, and they said, where are you headed? She's like, I was headed toward Petra. And they said, well, you're going in the wrong direction. We can take you to an encampment close by, and we would strongly recommend you, since you don't have anything, just going back across the border. You were in Israel. We can take you to the border. The Israelis will take you back across and you can be there. She said, no. Take me to this encampment, which is an encampment run by Bedouins. The Jordanian authority strongly suggested that she not do that, but she was determined. Luckily for her, she still had cash. She had hid it down in her pants and they didn't take it. Because whatever the balls of light were that she thought were headlights had saved her. She said, I think you guys came through here last night and scared them away. And they were like, no, we're on the nightly patrol here pretty regularly. This is the morning and we're about to be off. The guys come in. This is not part of our route. Like, literally, they told her. There's no reason. They told her that you were seen by a lookout on this hill. And that's it. It was by luck that they spotted you, and we were told, we radioed to come and intercept you. Nobody was here last night. And at night, the lookout can't see you. She's like, so then what were those balls of light? And one of them answered her directly and said, those are the masters of the desert. She's like, they literally call them the desert masters. And he says, what are these desert masters? And another one says they're called the Jinn. She's like, oh, well, that would explain the weird color of the headlights. They were orange. And then one of them spoke up and said, thank God they were orange, because if they were green, you'd be dead. And she's like, what does that mean? She's like, green means something bad. They all look at each other and they spoke in Arabic. And then one of them says, they come from the green mountains of the calf. There is a doorway here, not far from where you're wanting to go. And those are very powerful jinn. They come from the desert to collect souls, people that are lost, people that don't belong here. And you're definitely fitting that description. Once again, we would strongly suggest that you go back where you came from. They asked her where she was from, and she told them, I'm from Europe. And they laughed again, and they said, you don't belong here. The sun is going to blister your skin, and the jinn are going to eat your soul. And she thought it was deranged, that these people were trying to scare her. And then they asked her if why she didn't want to believe them. And she said, how much do you want to take me to Petra? And they said, we're not taking money to give you to take you to Petra. We have a job to do. We'll take you to the encampment. Once again, we'll give you the advice not to stay there. She said, okay. So they took her and they dropped her off. They were nice to her. She's fortunate in that, because they could have been very corrupt and done a lot of other things. One of them was a captain, and the other two took orders from him. She said that he seemed to be an honorable man, and nothing happened to her from them. He said, do not stay in this encampment. There's a caravan that comes through here every 2 days. When it comes through here tomorrow, get on it and go to Petra. Then leave. Do what you got to do. Don't be there at night. She said, okay. Then she gets to the encampment. She buys water and a few other things that she needs. And she meets a couple of people. By fortune, she was able to meet a couple other Europeans there at this encampment. They were an Austrian couple. They spoke perfect Arabic. She thought, these people, maybe, you know, kindred spirits. When she told them where she was headed, they said they were coming back from Petra and that it was beautiful and they had a good time. She said that she was planning on going, and they said, oh, no, it's shut down right now. You can go and walk around, but only for 2 hours during the day, and then you have to leave. She's like, well, I'm going to stay there overnight. And they said, that's impossible. Nobody's going to let you do that. She says, well, I plan on sneaking in. And they told her, go ahead. But they strongly advised her, once again, to not do this. So when the caravan comes through, some tourists, different people, you know, she gets on and joins. They take them within 10 miles of their destination. They drop her off, and they said the rest of the way there was a guide that would take them. The guide got really ill, began to vomit, and said he couldn't go on. Three of the people in the group decided that they were going to push on to Petra. Three. Two of them were the Austrian couple that said that they would go with her to make sure that she arrived safely. And then they were going to go back and then go back across the border into Israel. The other one was a Chinese student. Very nice guy, whose name just happened to be Zhen. coincidence. But he was a nice guy. And he said, look, I'll go with you. He's like, I'm doing a story on this, and it's for the Chinese, you know, it's for the government. I'm gonna write an article about this. And she said, okay. So he was a journalist, basically. And together, they decided to trek on, walking through the desert. They all became very, very, very hot, overheated. It was June, which was a really bad time to be there. The desert gets up to 120 degrees, and they feel like they're going to die. So when they get almost to their destination, dehydration, everything was starting to set in, and she was drinking her water very fast. The Austrian couple, they got within eyesight of the ruins of Petra, which is a city. I could get into the whole history of it, but I don't have time here now. I'll do it on the live stream. It's an abandoned city that sits up above or up into some cliffs. Like, you can't really, there's just one way in, one way, you know, you can't, you know, it's built to be protected. You know what I mean? So when they get close, the Austrian couple, they decide, they're like, look, you can go. We've been there. We're not going to go back. It just seems like something bad could happen. So you two can go on. We'll wait here. We'll camp here. So her and Jen decide to go into the city of Petra. At this time, it was 8 o'clock at night and almost getting dark. There were no guards there. There was no one. There were a lot of problems that were going on, and the Jordanian government was on high alert. There was a lot of issues happening between Israel, Palestine, Lebanon. There was all this upheaval with refugees and everything else. And so most of their manpower was near the borders. And they were also dealing with an insurrection. So there was not time for them to sit there and police this place. They told you, don't go there. You do it anyway. You do it at your own risk. It's like you go swimming at a place where people drown all the time. You shouldn't be doing it. You do it anyway. They go in. There was a fence. It was, you know, but they just easily lifted it up, went under it, and they were inside. When they went inside, she said, almost immediately we got separated. She's like, and when I turned the corner, exploring my flashlight I had gotten at the encampment, she's like, I see this thing. She's like, this was really toward the front of this place. It didn't take long at all. And she was yelling out to her companion, who was nowhere to be found. So as she turns and looks, she sees this thing. And she says thing, because I don't know what it is. She says it's sitting with its with like cross-legged, like Indian style, as we would call it. She's like, its hands are at its side. I think it's a human with long hair. But then when it turns its face, I see that it has a snout. And it stands up. And she says the eyes glowed green. She remembers what these soldiers had told her. Green, not a good thing. She also sees in the corner of her eye something move really quickly, like a shadow. This being with the green glowing eyes is not looking at her. It's walking in another direction. And this hooded, snouted looking being with what looked like hair flowing down the side of its face goes directly into a wall and is gone. Scares her so bad that she drops her flashlight and takes off running. And then she realizes as she's kicking the flashlight across the desert floor, I better go back and grab my flashlight because that's the only light I got. What she doesn't know and what she came to know and what I already understood when she was at this point of the story, I said, your flashlight died pretty quick, didn't it? She said, yes. How did you know? I said, well, this isn't a horror movie, but I know what happens to batteries around these entities. And she said, you're right. She's like, I went back and the flashlight was pretty much useless. She's like, but there was a strange glow around this place. I could see. And she's like, and I kept calling out to my friend, I guess you want to call him. He was nowhere to be found. The Austrians, they were like 2 miles away. There was nowhere. There was nobody. So I had to hunker down in the city of Petra alone at night with no one around. She's like, I sit down in a corner with my back up against a wall. Literally what used to be someone's house, like an inhabited house. Although the Arabs and the Bedouins and everyone else will tell you that this is the abode of the jinn. They built it. They lived in it with earthly bodies. They died in it, and they're still there. How that works? Just what they say. Not human habitation, although different people who've studied it, archaeologists say, yes, it was inhabited by humans. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it was humanoids. I don't know. But they say that there is a city that exists alongside Petra. Basically within it, that is a spiritual city that is very much vibrant, alive, and active, and it is owned, run, operated by the jinn. And you were never supposed to be there at night. Even if you go there with a tour and everything's fine, whatever, things will attach itself to you and they will follow you home and they will drain your energy, causing sickness, physical ailments of all kinds, and even madness. These are the legends of this place. This isn't make-believe. This isn't what I made up. This is what people say. And if you take anything from there and take it home, much like Hawaii, you will be trying to send it back. Believe me, you cannot take anything from these places. Legends or not, I wouldn't take a chance. I wouldn't test the hand of fate. I just wouldn't do it. She sat there in fear. No. it got extremely cold. Now, we know the desert gets cold at night, but she said this was unbelievable. The cold was biting my flesh. And in the daytime, my skin was fried. She goes, I was sunburned. My lips were chapped and I could feel every bit of the sand blowing on me. The wind was whipping around and I was watching these dust devils just turn into pillars in front of me. And out of one of these dust devils, she says, I see this black smoke swirl around and just drop to the ground and turn into what looks like a jackal-headed creature, reminiscent of Anubis. Walks directly towards her and begins to assault her, physically assault her, like punching, kicking, and hitting her. And at one point, even picking her up and biting part of her cheek off. This happened to this woman. She says, to this day, she says, I carry this scar. That part of my face is gone. She's like, I don't know what this thing was. It threw me against the wall. It cracked my skull. And by the grace of God, I lived. I laid there dying. She's like, and then I hear a voice as this thing is about to stomp my head. And it was like yelling, hey, hey. And she recognized it as one of the Austrian couple. It was the guy. She said he was a really nice guy. She said she heard him yelling. She said she couldn't remember. She's like, you couldn't even remember his name. It was like, you know, Hans, something, you know, very German name. She's like, to this day, I can't even remember. I just know that I heard him yelling and I saw him running up with the Chinese journalist. And I woke up and I was outside of Petra and I was in the dirt, in the sand. She's like, and I sat there going in and out of consciousness. And I tried to explain to them. And Jin had gone to get the couple to find her. He couldn't find her. He got turned around and he had a wild story to tell too. His story was somewhat like hers. He saw these beings that were sitting around cross-legged, basically chanting, almost like they were singing and they were swaying back and forth, but he didn't get a negative feeling from it. He thought they were like doing some kind of ritual. And he said that even watching them gave him sort of a peace. But then something grabbed him from behind, put its what would be hands if there was a human, but it obviously wasn't, under his armpits and lifted him up, literally throwing him several feet in the air. He dropped, he landed, badly bruised his tailbone. And as he tried to get up, this thing, which would appear and reappear, just looked like a black entity with a pyramidal diamond-shaped head. Not knowing what this thing is, still to this day, it baffles him, is what he stays in contact with Agnes. They've been friends for years. This guy moved to Thailand. What he told her happened was that this thing began to do the same thing that happened to her, assaulting him, beating him, kicking him, and trying to basically end his life. He managed to roll away from this thing, fall off of an embankment, which he didn't even know he was on. Don't even know how he got on it. Got up, ran for the fence, got out of there, and then got back to the Austrian couple and said, I can't find her. We need to help her. Blah, blah, blah. They go into Petra and then they find her broken, beaten, bloody. And so the next day they like, you can't walk. So what we're going to have to do, two of us will go get help and one of us will stay behind. So they didn't want to leave Jin there because he was hurt too. And it turns out he had a broken rib, which is very painful, but he didn't know it at the time. And he thought, well, I will walk. So they said, we got to make a decision here. Do we leave the two wounded people here? The one able-bodied male? No. So the woman, the wife, the Austrian, the female, she walks back with the Chinese guy and they go to the encampment, which is several miles away. When they get there, they said, look, we need help. She needs this, a person that's hurt. This woman needs help. We need to go back and get her. We'll call her Agnes. She said, Agnes needs help. We need to go pick her up. Nobody wanted to go. Nobody wanted to go. 2 days before, there had been a problem, and some Jordanian soldiers had showed up and arrested a couple people, and then there was some fighting, and a bunch of civil unrest was going on in the country, and everybody was like not really interested in going to Petra. Finally, they were able to pay some Bedouins to go with them to pick her up, put her on a tourist camel, and bring her back. That's what the plan was. When they got back to the spot where they should have been, they were not there. Problem was that the Austrian man that was left there to watch her overnight had a heart attack. And that was it. He died. She wakes up, he's stiff, he's cold. That she didn't know how or why or what took him, what the problem was. And she was like, oh my gosh, this guy's dead. There's nothing I can do. This is the worst thing that has ever happened to me in my life. Why did I do these things? Why did I come here? Why did I decide to go to this place at this time in my life? Something that people do every day now, they go there and they do whatever, but they go in groups, you know, and they go at the appropriate times, and it's very regulated, you know. Like, I would not go and sleep at Carlsbad Cavern in the middle of the night with no one else around. It's just something I wouldn't do. Now, if you're with a tour group and there's 30 of you and there's people around, it feels a lot different. I know, because I've talked to security guards who work in some of these places, and they don't even go deep into those places at night. They stay near the entrances, and even then, they hear things and see things.
Yeah, I'm sure they just stand at the entrance and say, anybody in there?
Yeah. Yeah, well. So, you know, this was a time where really and truly, she wanted to find herself. Well, she did. She found herself. And I couldn't help, and I've said this before on the show, I couldn't help but kind of feel like she got what she deserved. You had it coming.
Play stupid games. You win stupid prizes.
Yeah.
All the warning signs were there.
Mm-hmm.
But do what thou wilt, and then look what happens.
Yeah, and during when her and I talked about this, I told her, I said, I think you're learning a little bit about yourself while we're talking about it, because I don't think she really fully understood what she did, even at the age that she's at. And she gave me a compliment, and I appreciate the compliment. Thank you very much. But she said that I'm wise beyond my years. And I said, people have told me that, and I'm not bragging. This isn't patting myself on the back, but I'm perceptive. And I picked it up pretty quick that she was somebody who still, to this day, had not fully come to terms with the mistakes that she had made. And I think that was a big part of what was keeping her from telling this story to me and allowing me to retell it. Was because she, even though she's completely anonymous and insulated, still hearing this right now, she's probably feeling some anxiety and thinking, I should not have done this. When she got back home, and I'm jumping around a little bit here, she did make it home, folks, of course, obviously, because she told me the story. Her mother died 2 years after she got back. She spent a year being angry at her mother and not talking to her. Why? Well, her mother wasn't there to save her, I guess. I don't know. She began to cry at this point and tell me, I made a huge mistake. And I said, well, that's what happens, you know, when you do what you're going to do, you know. And she's like, at that point, she kind of challenged me, and this became contentious. And she says, don't you have any feelings? Don't you understand? I'm broken from this, you know. And I said, yes, I do. We all make mistakes. I said, but you have to admit to them. You have to step up to the plate and say, I made a mistake and I was wrong. She's like, do you do that? I said, yes, I do it all the time. And I've done it on my show. We are human beings and we are fallible. We are not God. We're not gods of any shape or form. We're just humans. We're just souls inside of a flesh suit vehicle. I said, what you encountered was the real reality. I was like, and you and your friends are lucky that you didn't die other than the Austrian gentleman. We'll call him Hans because she told me his name. But at the time, she was so damaged in the head, she couldn't remember. And I said, after the blow to the head, you should have turned around and gone back. But that didn't stop you. I said, and then you're told by the military guys, hey, this isn't a good idea. And then the couple tells you, don't do this. And a man could still be alive if you hadn't had him there in the middle of the desert. And I said, what do you think about his heart attack? She says, I think it was caused by the masters of that realm. She said, and I'll tell you why. She says, while I was unconscious, I think I witnessed something that I thought was a dream. And I saw these two balls of light, these greenish, lime-colored lights come up out of the ground, zipping around one another, and landing on this guy's legs and on his head. And he screamed and grabbed his chest, and I woke up, and he was deceased. She's like, but I could tell by the coldness of his body, he had been deceased for, you know, for hours. In the dream, it was like it had just happened. I said, yeah, because they manipulate time. Time doesn't exist for them any more than it exists for us. It's an illusion. And I told her that. And I said, and you were basically witnessing something out of space and time. And she says, yeah, I think you're correct. And she goes, I don't know why they didn't come for me. And I said, they probably were going to. But some of the stories that you get from this region, these beings, they have this ritualistic behavior. And I was like, and maybe, I don't know. Maybe they tried. Maybe it was your job to stay alive, to come back and tell this story. A cautionary tale, not just of the horrors that can await those that go into the desert and face these sand demons, whatever you want to call them, desert masters, jinn, demons, whatever. And I told her, I said, this is a cautionary tale about living in a constant state of rebellion.
Yeah.
And the consequences of that, those life choices.
And as terrible as it is what happened to her, the sad part is it might actually be a mercy that it happened to her, because if she would have gone on living her life as she once did, there's no telling what kind of destructive decisions or what kind of like very bad moral choices she would have made that would have hurt not only her, but the people that cared about her and the people that she cared about. You know, so I mean, it takes a lot for some people to change their ways and to learn it, to snap out of whatever it is that they're doing that is just not correct. It took this much to snap her out of it, but some people, they never learn. They'll go their whole lives just never having the opportunity to just get really like disciplined, I guess, like she was, or punished, and their lives are just tales of sadness, despair, the destruction. She might have been spared from that, you know, but it took this much to do that, you know.
It's funny, as you were talking about this scene, it was reminding me of that Jim Carrey movie, Bruce Almighty or whatever, where he's driving down a road and he's like complaining, saying like, you know, God, show me a sign. And there's literally like street signs and coming saying like, hey, stop moving. Don't go this way. Turn around. Caution. And then he just continues down the road and gets into a car accident. And is like, what do you expect? I think, you know, as little understanding of these things that we have, it's all the more important for us to be cautious with how we interact with them. And, you know, doing things like that, you have to be more well aware of your, not just your surroundings, but like what the surroundings of what people are telling you. You know, like you don't live there. You've never been there. You're literally visiting there. If people are telling you, don't go there, don't go there.
It seems to be the arrogance of the Western traveler, yeah, too, back in those days in particular. Definitely. The whole movement, that hippie movement, whatever it was.
Yeah, and it's ironic too, because there's like a kind of a cognitive dissonance there, because Westerners oftentimes will kind of romanticize foreign cultures, even elevate these cultures above their own. But then at the drop of a hat, whenever people from these cultures are telling them something that pertains to the metaphysical or the spiritual, then suddenly, oh, they're just superstitious.
They're just ignorant savages.
Yeah, they're just ignorant. They don't know any better. They're just simple people. So which is it? Are they one with nature and great and intelligent and wise old sages, or are they backward primitive people? You can't have both.
And we see that quite a bit with people, and in particular, we have several Native American friends,
yeah,
who we've talked to, and even some of them we've interviewed, and some of them have told us, you know, like these people, they pick and choose what to believe from us.
Yeah.
You know, we tell you that the world is this way and that Bigfoot is this way, and well, no, because we know better and you're ignorant savages. But then later on, you know, oh, your culture's so beautiful and so cool and blah, blah, blah.
The worst is when they just blanket term stuff.
Or I guess I had that backwards. Your culture's so beautiful and blah, blah, blah. And then later on, they disagree because they don't think that Bigfoot is a sweet, kind, caring here in the Hendersons.
Like the worst is when they blanket term stuff where like they speak about one tribe, but it's like it's about all Native Americans.
They're all different. They're not even genetically the same.
Yeah, either, it's very different. And they all, at one point, probably dislike each other or were at war with each other.
Disagreements.
I mean, it was not a peaceful time.
They think it's like the Smurf village.
It's like they're a bunch of dryads out there just loving trees and dancing in the forest. It's like, no. You know, humans were still humans.
Same thing with what was going on in Jordan was that there were different tribes. I mean, the map was cut out and carved by Westerners, by the British.
Yeah.
And those maps of the Levant are not correct.
Yeah, they didn't take into account tribal borders at all.
The Bedouins themselves are even from different tribes, different bloodlines, different lineages. And the Arabs and the Berbers and the different types of Bedouins are all different types of people. Just like the Jinn that they encountered. What I've heard about Petra, and I heard about this from, this was a Sufi mystic that had once said, and I read this years ago, that Petra was basically an interchange. It wasn't one type of demon or jinn or being that lived there. It was basically like if you were to go to Hong Kong or New York, there's all these different types of people roaming around. Imagine the spiritual flip side of one of those major cities, what kind of stuff you're going to see. Now, I'm going to talk about that at some point because I have someone who she can literally, and she's actually kind of proven this to me, she can see with second sight, and she can usually turn it off and on. And what she saw when she spent 4 days in Hong Kong blew her mind. So then she took off, flew around, visited some different places, and when she went to New York, she'd had enough. She saw things that were just, you know, and this isn't the first time I've heard this, but this Sufi, what I read, and I remember reading this years ago, he was one of the people, I've talked about it on the show, who talked about how thought forms were one of the most dangerous things, you know, because there's no laws that govern them. But he claimed that the land of Petra, that area, was inhabited by multiple different types of interdimensional beings.
So it's like the spiritual equivalent of an international city.
Like Hong Kong, Singapore, New York. Think about it, yeah.
That's scary to think about.
A melting pot of spirits.
Just being in a major city is dangerous enough. Mm-hmm. Like physically a major city, but in a spiritual like
interchange.
Yeah.
Who knows what they were seeing? And she stayed friends with that guy for over the years. He had traveled around and they became friends. And at one point, they even were boyfriend and girlfriend. He came to sit with her and be with her in the hospital. She grew fond of him. They went back and they spent some time together, living in Denmark. And then they split up and he went off and, you know, ended up in Thailand now. But even to this day, they stay in touch. They're friends. They're friends on Facebook. And I actually got to correspond with him. Not a whole lot. But he never went back to China, which created a problem for him, which I'm not going to get into. And the people that he was supposed to be with were supposed to stay in a designated area to wait for him, doesn't know whatever happened to them. So his people were lost to the sand. The Austrian woman, she lost touch with her. The last she talked to her was in 1984. She was living in like Hamburg, Germany. And yeah, she made really good friends with one of the people at the hospital in Israel. She was in Jordan for a while, and then she got sent to Tel Aviv, and she made really good friends with a person that was an Israeli, and talked about Petra having had been there once. She said the same thing. She's like, it's haunted. It's full of the dibuk, as they say in Hebrew, which is demons. And she went to a psychic one day, and this was at the behest of her sister, who she claims has an actual ability, second sight. She says, I'm going to take you to this woman. So they traveled a long ways. They went to Slovenia. And she said that she was interviewed by this woman and talked to about her horrific experience there. And the woman introduced her to a psychic, and that psychic interviewed her also. And she told her, she says, what happened to you was a burning of your soul, and not only a physical way, a metaphysical way. It was not just your body that was injured, but your soul. That she had what we would call past life trauma that had not been dealt with, and she had an anger toward her mother because in the past life, which she said happened during World War II, her mother had left her to die. And she was supposedly killed by the Soviets. And she said that at certain points in her life, she would have these dreams of being a young girl. And she didn't know where she was, but she thinks it was Poland. And she remembers these men in these uniforms. And she said that it was very reminiscent of the USSR. Red stars on their caps. And that they shot her. And that the person that was supposed to take care of her, her older sister, left her. It was a dream. She said it must have been a dream until she met that psychic when she was 36 years old, which was 11 years after the horrors of what happened to her in Petra. And then she told me, she says, I said, would you ever go back and visit or do it again? Would you go and visit that city? And she says, oh, I have. She said, when I was 38, I went back. I said, wow.
For what?
I don't know. She says that it gave her some sort of closure.
I mean, she just went.
She went with a group
during the day. With she the went group,
during
right?
the yeah with a group during the day. She went to the spots where she believed she had had the issues, but she said the city looked completely different than what she remembered it at night.
Yeah, there's no way to really tell what kind of illusions to which you'd be subjected.
And she said that she knew that the power of that place was real, and she wanted to go and visit some other places. And I told her, I said, well, Al Madam and Baalbek would be some logical choices if you wanted to go and risk your life and be around a bunch of crazy stuff. But I told her she could also go and visit the LBL or Devil's Backbone or Skinwalker Ranch. She's not an American, so she was kind of like, yeah. She's like, I thought about traveling to America and going to some places. The Haunted Forest of Japan, you know.
I mean,
they call it the suicide forest.
You're going to risk your life like that. Just bypass the whole risking part and just go to a volcano.
Just jump in.
Skip the part where you might die.
Well, I always find it funny, these risk takers, people who, they love this adrenaline. They're like adrenaline junkies, but yet.
No, I can't stand those people.
They won't. Like, if you got in their face to try to fight them, they're like, hey, man, chill out. I'm like, weren't you just jumping off of a building 20 stories up? Weren't you just flipping your car around or whatever? But then someone gets in your face and you're like, oh, hey, man.
Like, yeah, you know, it's fun when you're zipping in and out of traffic on your stupid motorcycle, putting everyone's life at risk. That adrenaline's great, right? But someone wants to get in your face and tell you something, and all of a sudden, you're not a thrill seeker anymore, are you? Yeah. You're not an adrenaline junkie anymore, are you? Because you're not putting other people's life at risk.
No, they're a cop caller at that point.
Yeah.
They become a cop
caller. I'm sorry. I have a special disdain for adrenaline junkies. Get out of here. You're just a coward.
I felt personal.
It is. I don't like them at all.
And then what ends up happening is they get messed up somewhere, and then people have to spend thousands of dollars rescuing them.
Yeah.
That whole show, I Shouldn't Be Alive, is what that is. Yeah, I went and I just did a bunch of stupid crap and I was floating in the ocean and the Coast Guard had to go and rescue me, risking their lives. It's not like they don't have families to think about, you know, but I couldn't help it. And I told Agnes this and she'll understand. I mean, we've had a couple conversations here and I said, look, I can't help but listen to your story and just be very, very angry at your stubbornness, at your absolute nonconformist BS attitude toward this as a young person. She's like, oh, I assure you, I'm a different person now. I said, no, it's not the person you are now. I said, now I think you're a lovely, wonderful, beautiful person. I think you survived something very traumatic. And then you went back and faced it, which was even more amazing, which I don't know if even I could do that. I don't know. I've never thought about that, you know. But she said, and she told me this, she's like, I know what I did. I know I screwed up. The sins of the past, you know. And then one day, she was watching my show, and she saw me on my show. And it's no secret. I don't hide my emotion. I cried on my show, which I've done a few times during this whole ordeal that's gone on. And she said, I saw the emotion in your eyes. I saw the pain in you. And she goes, and I realized you really were being honest, and you're brutally honest, and I appreciate the honesty. She's like, at any time, I could have just cut the story off, and that was it. And I told her, I said, I assure you, I have a lot of people who message me with their stories. It would have been unfortunate to not get to talk to you and get to use your story. And I'm glad that eventually you released it to me to let me tell it. And she said, that's good, because I'll never tell it again. And she's 70 years old. And I told her, that's your right. Do what you want. I don't own the story. It's your story. It happened to you, not me. I said, but we've all been through things that, you know, hurt us and make us who we are. We all have to, at some point, take responsibility and admit that we're wrong and that we've made mistakes. We all have to go through that. If you don't, then you're a sociopathic liar, fraud, not a human. Something wrong with you. But we all know people who do that. She could be a 70-year-old person who, by her own admission, is in failing health and still not repentant and not someone who learned a damn thing from going through that. There are people like that.
No, yeah, those are some of the like most hopeless people. Just
NPCs.
Like people who've lived for 60, 70, 80 years and are still just doing the same like immoral things and decisions that they were doing in their 20s, 30s. Never learned.
So there is a lesson there, folks. You have to take personal responsibility. And she says she spent the rest of her life feeling bad for the things that happened there in the desert where she should never have been and probably never should have gone back. But she did it. She conquered her fear. And I told her, I said, you know, that's like someone who gets attacked by a shark and just goes right back into the shark infested waters just to prove to themselves that they still can, you know, master their fear or whatever.
Yeah.
And she said, she's like, I'm not going to lie. I felt a heavy presence of something there. I don't know.
Probably remembered you.
And she said she had nightmares and she thinks that something may have followed her back, which is a story for another time because she had a 2-year ordeal with something after she returned from Petra.
It doesn't surprise me.
And we will talk about that probably on the live stream.
These hitchhiker ghosts are the worst.
They are. Parasites. She doesn't think it was the same thing that attacked her, but something piggybacked. So, folks, that's all we got for tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show and you have something to think about. Maybe it pertains to you. Maybe it doesn't.
These stories were supposed to talk about Petra for a long time, so I'm happy we were finally able to. Now one was worth the wait.
Well, I also had to get her to give me the permission.
That's true.
I was on the verge of it, and I'm not going to do it if somebody's not going to let me,
mm-hmm.
which is why I quit writing the MK Ultra book, because two people can't talk about it. They just couldn't finish. They can't finish, and I can't write. So thank you, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being Patreon members. If you are, if you're not, go get on board. Help us out. And good night.